Good morning. My name is Marissa, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to Sequel Communications' earnings call for fourth quarter 2011 and full year 2011. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Pete Abel, Senior Vice President of Corporate Communications. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to this discussion of the fourth quarter and full year 2011 results for Sequel Communications Holdings 1, LLC, and its subsidiaries, which do business as Suddenlink Communications. Before we get started this morning, we would like to remind you that certain statements made during this conference call might be considered forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Act of 1995. Those statements are subject to the various risks and uncertainties described in our annual report, which is posted to our website. These risks and uncertainties could cause actual future results to differ materially from the results expressed or implied by any forward-looking statements made on this call. The information discussed today will be based on our annual report and quarterly earnings release for the period ended December 31, 2011. Both the annual report and earnings release have been posted to the investor relations section of our website at suddenlink.com. The release compares actual and pro forma financial and operating results for the fourth quarters and full years of 2011 and 2010. Today, our presenters will focus their comments on year-over-year pro forma results for the fourth quarter. And with that, I'll now turn the call over to our CEO, Jerry Kent. Jerry?
Thanks, and good morning, everyone. I want you to know that I really appreciate your time and interest in Sequel Communications. We're really pleased to report fourth quarter 2011 results that deliver on our goals of maintaining and growing customer relationships, increasing market share with bundled services, enhancing the customer experience through our Project Imagine investments, and delivering a consistently strong financial and operating performance. We finished 2011 in outstanding financial condition. Our customer-centric strategy has now helped us deliver 21 consecutive quarters of pro forma revenue growth, and our results continue to be among the very best in the industry. Our track record of generating consistently outstanding results was rewarded with our recent closing of a $2.7 billion credit facility that was well-received in the bank market. The new debt facility extends our debt maturity profile, increases our liquidity, and positions us to further execute in our business strategy of providing a superior level of customer care. Our fourth quarter pro forma revenue totaled $489.7 million, a 5.8% increase over the same quarter last year. Revenue for the full year 2011 totaled $1.93 billion, a 7.1% gain over 2010. Fourth quarter adjusted EBITDA, as defined in our earnings release, was approximately $189.5 million, a 9.6% increase over the year-ago period. EBITDA for the year grew 8.9% to $717.1 million, and before one-time non-recurring expenses, full-year EBITDA grew 10% to $724.8 million. At year-end 2011, we had nearly 3.41 million revenue-generating units, an increase of more than 151,000, or 4.6%, over year-end 2010. We added 24,300 RGUs in the fourth quarter. Pro forma fourth quarter ARPU, or average revenue per unit, was $129.31, an increase of 9.4% over the fourth quarter of 2010. Free cash flow in the fourth quarter 2011, as defined in our earnings release, was $42 million, compared to $9.4 million in the fourth quarter of 2010. Our infrastructure upgrades through Project Imagine are helping us grow market share by extending our industry-leading broadband internet speeds to a larger audience. Further deploying advanced services such as high-definition TV and video on demand, and enabling the expansion of business services. Now, no one is going to be happier than me when Project Imagine will be completed later this year. When we're finished, high definition, or HD service will be available to substantially all of our customers, with an average of nearly 90 HD channels on our lineup and the capacity in most areas for up to 200 HD channels. Digital simulcast and video on demand will be available to well over 90% of our customers, and we've expanded the video on demand library significantly. DOCSIS 3.0 broadband technology will be available to 94% of our customers, and in a number of markets, including rural markets like Pomeroy, Ohio, and Ripley, West Virginia, we provide the fastest internet speed in the cable industry at 107 megabits per second. From late 2009 through the end of 2011, we invested 81% of the approximately $350 million we've committed for Project Imagine and related success-based capital. As we near the completion of Project Imagine, reduced capital spending and increased EBITDA growth should result in accelerated growth and free cash flow. Now, Tom will provide more details momentarily about where we stand with Project Imagine, but I want to single out our engineering department for an outstanding job in leading this three-year project. It's been instrumental to our success. To further improve our financial and competitive positions, we continue to market compelling bundled offerings. Customers who bundle two or three of our services stay with us longer and are much less susceptible to competitive offers and churn. During the fourth quarter, we added 9,400 bundled customers, and roughly 8 out of 9 of these additions were triple play customers. At year end, nearly 62% of all customers took two or more services from us, and we continue to have upside potential for bundling. Last year was the second consecutive year we increased total residential customer relationships, growing them by 3,600 during 2011. We ended the year with approximately 1.37 million residential customers. Looking at non-video services, we continue to grow high-speed internet and telephone customers in the fourth quarter. Nearly one out of six customer relationships is a non-video relationship, and a majority of our service gross margin is now generated by non-video services. In addition, the number of non-video homes served grew by 20.4% in 2011. During the fourth quarter, we also continued achieving significant growth in our other lines of businesses, including our residential security, wireless home networking, and commercial data and phone services. Note that we do not include these services in our reported residential numbers, as commercial data and phone services are broken out separately. In 2011, we grew home security customers by nearly 5,300 units, or 47.6% during 2011. In our wireless home networking business, we grew customers 14.1% in the fourth quarter and nearly 61,600 units, or 113.9% during 2011. We doubled our penetration of Wi-Fi at home customers from 6.1% of total residential internet customers at the end of 2010 to 12.2% of total residential internet customers at December 31st, 2011. While we've been successful in marketing our non-video services and growing customer relationships, we're not ceding any ground to our video competitors. The benefits of Project Imagine, with digital picture quality and expanded video offerings, should help us be more competitive. In addition, several other initiatives are being deployed to make our video service even more attractive. For example, we're looking to stay ahead of the curve as consumers increasingly seek out internet video. To that end, our online video service, Suddenlink2Go, has become quite popular. By the end of the year, we had recorded approximately 3.4 million video streaming sessions since this service was launched in early June. That's an average of nearly 500,000 video streams per month. Also in the fourth quarter, we introduced enhancements to our TiVo Premier DVR service to enable a multi-room DVR experience. As an example, Suddenlink customers with three TiVo Premier devices can record up to six shows at the same time, watch recordings on any TV, start watching a recorded program in one room, pause and resume it in another, and have up to 600 hours of recording space. In addition, our customers can now take advantage of TiVo apps for iPads and iPhones that allow users to search, browse, explore, and share their favorite entertainment all without interrupting what's playing on the television. With these apps, they can also manage functions like scheduling recordings. With our TiVo partnership, multi-room DVR, Suddenlink to go, wireless home networking, and home security, we're introducing more and more innovative services that are critical to keeping us competitive in today's rapidly changing environment. We expect such services to contribute to our future growth and enhance the value of our brand and the value of our services to existing customers. Meanwhile, we continue to enjoy success in our commercial lines of business. Our commercial organization maintained its momentum in the fourth quarter. For the full year 2011, commercial revenue grew 15.4%, including 25.2% year-over-year growth in commercial data and telephone revenues on a combined basis. In addition, our carrier business saw ongoing demand from wireless carriers that need higher bandwidth connectivity between cell towers and central offices. From what we see, I'm exceptionally optimistic that 2012 will be a watershed year for our fiber-to-the-tower business. Finally, we had a rather exciting year-end from another perspective. We had 76 retransmission consent agreements come due in December, by far our largest RTC cycle. And it's no secret that broadcasters and the networks are being very aggressive in these negotiations. Despite that pressure, we were able to successfully execute 75 retrans agreements with no channel disruption. The other negotiation resulted in one small cable system seeing the NBC channel go dark for about 30 days. That channel was restored shortly before the Super Bowl. We instituted our rate increases in the fourth quarter, including increased RTC pass-throughs. Combined, those increases were larger than we normally charge customers, but programming cost increases and the unusually large RTC cycle were major factors. And these increases had some impact on our video performance in the fourth quarter. Our RTC negotiations were intense and caused a lot of tension and concern with organizations. We bargained hard but fair and were prepared to make the hard decision. However, I'm pleased that we were able to avoid the major risk of channel losses to a large number of customers by successfully concluding these negotiations. I'll now turn the call over to Tom McMillan, our Chief Operating Officer, to provide some additional perspective on Project Imagine and our operating achievements in the fourth quarter. Tom.
Thanks, Jerry, and good morning, everyone. Before I expand on some of the results that Jerry touched on, I'd like to mention several operational highlights from the fourth quarter. One, we continue to balance the trade-off between share and yield. Consider that the increase we achieved in residential customer ARPU between the fourth quarters of 2011 and 2010 was 8.3% better than the increase in residential customer ARPU between the fourth quarters of 2010 and 2009. Two, we saw our customer call volumes moderate in the fourth quarter with a 15% reduction in customer contact rate as the MPG migration activity concluded and activity for Project Imagine slowed. As a result, our care center service levels were once again in line with our expectations. Three, we began rolling out our allowance plan for our residential high-speed internet customers and to date have introduced the plan to more than 50% of our customer base. Four, we are proud to mention that we were recognized in many of the communities we serve as the number one video, internet, or communications provider in the area. And in several cases, we are a multiple-year winner of this recognition. And five, our commercial team launched Suddenlink Premier and Suddenlink Extreme business internet services with speeds of 20 megabits down and 5 up, as well as 50 down and 8 up. These services are made possible by our DOCSIS 3.0 infrastructure. In addition, as Jerry noted, we added 24,300 RGUs during the fourth quarter and more than 151,000 in all of 2011, for an annual growth rate of 4.6%. On basic video, we ended the third quarter with approximately 1.25 million customers, a 3.5% decline since the year-ago period. On digital video, we ended the quarter with more than 767,000 customers, up 13,700 units in the quarter, and nearly 71,000 units, or 10.2% growth for 2011. Digital penetration of basic video customers continues to increase, and at the end of the year was 61.3%, up from 53.7% a year ago. Along with our growth in digital video, we added more than 27,400 DVR customers over the last 12 months, an annual growth rate of 8.1%. DVR penetration of digital customers stood at 47.7% at year's end. Looking at our success in HD, we added more than 104,300 HD customers in 2011, representing a 29.3% annual growth and bringing HD penetration of digital customers to 60.1%, up from 51.2% a year ago. Total penetration of advanced digital services, either DVR or HD customers, stood at 62.5% of digital customers at the end of 2011, up from 54.5% at the end of 2010. Once again, high-speed internet led the way as we finished the quarter with more than 951,000 residential customers, up 14,200 units during the quarter and 65,100 units, or 7.3%, since year-end 2010. As a result, residential data penetration was 33.3% of estimated data homes passed, up from 31.7% a year ago. And nearly one out of three new high-speed internet customers signed up for our Suddenlink Wi-Fi at home service. On telephony, we finished the quarter with nearly 439,000 customers, up approximately 12,500 units during the quarter, and nearly 61,000 units, or 16.1%, during 2011. As a result, residential telephony penetration was 18.6% of estimated telephone homes passed, up from 15.9% a year earlier. At the end of 2011, total customer relationships were up approximately 3,600, with lower margin video customer losses being more than offset by a net gain of approximately 37,000 non-video higher margin customers. Our continued focus on serving more of the homes we pass with active network is paying off. We are particularly proud of achieving this growth without deeply discounting video services. On the commercial side of our business, we produced another strong quarter, gaining 1,000 commercial internet customers and 1,500 commercial phone customers. At year-end, our 47,400 commercial internet customers represented a 9.7% increase over the past 12 months, while our 18,100 commercial phone customers represented a 52.1% increase during 2011. As a reminder, our commercial phone customers averaged nearly three lines per business. Despite this growth, we still have more than 29,000 business customers using our data products that have not purchased our telephone services. This offers a meaningful opportunity to upgrade and package these customers. We've also continued to see robust growth in our business of providing fiber to the tower for cellular carriers. With up to 3,000 addressable towers in our footprint, we now have more than 400 tenants installed, approximately 280 more tenants in the process of being installed, and proposals outstanding for approximately 650 additional tenants. 2011 was our most successful year so far, as we sold 374 tenants and installed more than 300 of them. As we've noted before, many of the initial anchor tenants we sold are co-located with other tenants on the same tower. We remain optimistic about our ability to serve additional tenants on currently served towers. And what's more, tenants already using our tower service continue to upgrade to more bandwidth. And as Jerry mentioned, early indications are that our 2012 fiber to the tower activity will be even more impressive. Next, I'd like to comment briefly on our progress on Project Imagine. At year-end 2011, as Jerry noted, the project was more than 81% complete. Among other efforts in the fourth quarter, we continued distributing digital adapters to customers so that we can transition to all digital lineups, reclaim bandwidth, and add even more services. Through the end of 2011, we had installed more than 955,000 digital adapters in 67 cable systems. Furthermore, we had achieved the following Project Imagine milestones as of year-end 2011. DOCSIS 3.0 technology was deployed to cable systems serving 86% of customers. By year-end, we had launched our 50-meg and 107-meg services in 18 additional markets. Video on demand service was available to more than 86% of basic video customers. Our on demand content currently features more than 10,000 titles, including more than 1,000 HD titles. With room to grow, we plan to add additional content in the months ahead. Customer VOD streams in December were 4.1 million, more than 7% higher than the number of streams in December of last year. Our high-definition services are now available to 95% of our customer, and at year-end, our weighted average number of HD channels stood at 82, with some markets providing 100 or more HD channels. Our HD lineup now offers more than three times as many channels as the 24 HD channels we offered on average before the start of Project Imagine. Additionally, we've been busy in our newly acquired Arizona markets. We have interconnected six of these markets and tied them to our backbone, and we've added a new internet drain peering location for our backbone in Phoenix, Arizona. This has enabled us to add more than 30 HD channels, begin the process of bringing all digital signals to these markets, and launch VOD services consistent with our other service areas. Beyond Project Imagine, we have continued to expand the availability of Suddenlink TiVo Premier DVR service, which is now available to more than 70% of our customers. Our Connect and Protect home security service is available to 70% of our customers, and Suddenlink To Go is available across our footprint. Finally, I would like to acknowledge the Suddenlink employees serving our customers in Branson, Missouri, and surrounding areas. Branson was one of the communities that sustained damage from recent tornadoes that moved through the central United States. Our local and regional teams did a remarkable job in quickly restoring service to our customers, and we are thankful for all their efforts. Thank you for your time. I'd now like to turn things over to our CFO, Mary Medusky, for a closer look at our financial results during the quarter. Mary?
Thanks, Tom. Today I'll discuss the financial results for Sequel Communications Holdings One, LLC, and subsidiaries for the fourth quarter of 2011. Adding to what Jerry and Tom have already provided. I'll also discuss our balance sheet and liquidity position. As noted, I'll focus my comments on pro forma fourth quarter year-over-year results, drawing on our annual report and earnings release. Our annual report and earnings release are available on our website. For bank lenders listening to this call, our bank lender package, which covers Sequel Communications LLC and subsidiaries, has been posted to Intralinks, including a copy of our audited financial statements and compliance certificate. The pro forma information we discussed today includes the MPG acquisition completed on April 1, 2011, as well as the Greenwood, Mississippi cable system we acquired in August 2010. And it excludes two small non-strategic cable systems we disposed of in November 2010, as if those transactions had all been consummated on January 1, 2010. At December 31st, our total debt outstanding was approximately $3.7 $8 billion, comprised of $1.825 billion face amount of our 8.625% senior notes at Sequel Communications Holdings One, $1.94 billion of senior secured term loans at Sequel Communications LLC, and $10.2 million of capital leases and other obligations at Sequel Communications LLC. At December 31st, we had a $200 million undrawn revolver, fully available except for $16 million of outstanding letters of credit. On February 14th, 2012, we entered into a new credit facility, which refinanced the credit facility in place at December 31st. It provides for up to $2.7 billion of loans in the aggregate, consisting of a $2.2 billion funded senior secured term loan facility and a $500 million revolver, undrawn at closing. The revolver is scheduled to mature on February 14, 2017. The term loan facility is scheduled to mature on February 14, 2019. As a result of this financing, the company has no significant debt maturities until 2017, and we have enhanced our liquidity profile with our expanded revolver. The borrowing rate for the revolver is LIBOR plus 250, while the borrowing rate for the term loan is LIBOR plus 300 with a 1% LIBOR floor. The credit facility contains one financial maintenance covenant, a maximum senior secured leverage ratio set at 4.5 times at June 30 this year, with step downs to 4.0 times in the future. Suddenlink used the proceeds from the new term loan facility to repay in full and terminate its existing credit facility and pay fees and expenses. We also expect to use a portion of these proceeds, plus $160 million of revolver borrowings under the new credit facility, to make distributions to Sequel Communications Holdings of $370 million next week and up to an additional $70 million in May following the delivery of the compliance certificate for the first quarter of 2012. Sequel Communications Holdings will use such distributions to repay a portion of the original capital contributions made by holders of common units of Sequel Holdings and to make distributions to holders of options and restricted units of Sequel Holdings. Following these distributions, the company has no further distribution plans. Pro forma for the new credit facility, the expected revolver borrowings, and the expected March distribution, the senior secured leverage ratio for Sequel Communications LLC would have been 3.09 times, and total leverage ratio for Sequel Communications Holdings 1 would have been 5.76 times at December 31, 2011. Pro forma cash balances would have been $125 million. Net of all cash, pro forma total leverage would have been 5.63 times at December 31, 2011. The weighted average duration of our $1.35 billion swap portfolio, which rolled forward with the new credit facility, was reduced to approximately 5 months at December 31st. Of note, $950 million will terminate next month, and the remaining $400 million will terminate in October of this year. Now for a few comments on our fourth quarter financial results, pro forma for acquisitions and divestitures. As Jerry mentioned, total revenue for the fourth quarter of 2011 was $489.7 million, representing growth of 5.8% or $26.8 million over the fourth quarter of 2010. ARPU was $129.31, an increase of 9.4% over the fourth quarter of 2010. Our increase in total revenue for the fourth quarter of 2011 versus the fourth quarter of 2010 was largely attributable to increases in residential high-speed internet, telephone, and advanced digital video revenues, and growth in revenues from our commercial and carrier businesses. Residential revenue growth resulted from increases in the trailing 12 months in the number of new telephone, high-speed internet, and digital video customers, an increase in the penetration of existing customers for these services, video and high-speed internet rate increases, and incremental revenues from video on-demand, high-definition television, and video and digital video recorder services, as more customers purchased advanced video offerings from us during the trailing 12 months. Offsetting this residential revenue growth in part was a decrease due to the impact of bundling and promotional discounts and a decline in basic video customers. Revenues from our commercial and carrier businesses grew due to increases in commercial high-speed internet and telephone customers in the trailing 12 months and from increases in cell tower and backhaul revenues. Video service revenues increased 1.1%, primarily due to video rate increases, increased VOD service revenue, and customer growth in our digital and advanced video services, offset in part by a lower number of basic video customers and digital customers purchasing fewer digital tiers of service on average. High-speed internet service revenues increased 11.1% due to an increase in residential high-speed internet customers over the trailing 12 months, the impact of rate increases, growth in our commercial high-speed internet services to small and medium-sized businesses, and growth in carrier services. Telephone service revenues increased 18.9%, primarily due to an increase in residential telephone customers, offset in part by the impact of bundling and promotional discounts, and due to growth in our commercial telephone services to small and medium-sized businesses. Advertising revenues decreased 10.2%, largely due to lower revenues from political ad sales, offset in part by increases in automotive and retail ad sales. Excluding political ad sales, advertising revenue would have increased 7.5%. Other revenues increased 11.7%, primarily due to increased rental revenues from high-definition and DVR-capable digital converters, increased home networking revenue, increased administrative fees associated with the underlying growth of the business, higher franchise fees consistent with video service revenue increases, higher broadcast retrans fees, increased wire maintenance revenue, and higher security service revenue. Our commercial lines of business, which are embedded in the video, high-speed internet, telephone, and other revenues reflected in our earnings release, are comprised of commercial and bulk video, commercial high-speed internet, fiber-based on- and off-network carrier services, and commercial telephone. Revenues for the commercial lines of business totaled $57.8 million, or 11.8% of total revenue in the fourth quarter of 2011, representing growth of 15.3% versus the fourth quarter of 10. Our commercial data and telephone revenues grew 24.5% year-over-year on a combined basis. Operating costs and expenses rose 3.5%, primarily due to higher programming costs and retrans consent expenses, increased net compensation and employee-related costs, including contract labor, and increased marketing expenses, offset in part by a decrease in telephone expense. In addition, the fourth quarter of 2011 includes approximately $500,000 of non-recurring expenses, primarily related to acquisition and integration expenses associated with NPG. Adjusted EBITDA for the fourth quarter 2011 was $189.5 million, an increase of 9.6% from the same quarter last year, resulted in an adjusted EBITDA margin of 38.7%. Excluding certain non-recurring expenses primarily associated with the acquisition and integration of NPG, adjusted EBITDA for the fourth quarter 2011 would have increased 9.2% compared to the fourth quarter 2010. Excluding these expenses would have produced an adjusted EBITDA margin of 38.8%, an improvement of 120 basis points from the fourth quarter of 2010. For the full year 2011, excluding certain non-recurring expenses associated primarily with the acquisition and integration of NPG and compensation expense related to our January 2011 equity distribution, adjusted EBITDA would have increased 10% compared to 2010. Income from operations for the fourth quarter 2011 was $81.5 million, an increase of 16.9% compared to the fourth quarter of 10. This increase is due to year-over-year revenue increases, outpacing increases in operating, selling, and administrative, and depreciation and amortization expenses. Net income was approximately $7.2 million for the fourth quarter 2011 compared to net income of 5.9% for the fourth quarter of 10. Fourth quarter 2011 capital expenditures were approximately $79.1 million. For the full year 2011, capital expenditures were $368 million, finishing within the previously established range of $360 to $370 million, inclusive of NPG, Project Imagine, and related success-based capital expenditures. Capital expenditures in 2010 were $354.1 million. During 2012, we expect capital expenditures to be approximately $325 to $345 million, which includes capital spending associated with the remainder of Project Imagine and related success-based capital. As Jerry mentioned, free cash flow for the fourth quarter was positive $42 million compared to positive free cash flow of $9 million for the same period last year. Free cash flow for the year ended December 31st was $52 million compared with $15.8 million for the year ended December 31st, 2010. The fourth quarter improvement in free cash flow is due to enhanced operating results and decreased capital expenditures, offset in part by increased cash interest expense. We expect free cash flow to expand in the future as EBITDA grows, Project Imagine concludes, and our interest rate hedges roll off. I'll now conclude my remarks and turn the call back over to the operator to facilitate questions. I would like to remind everyone that this is a public call, and we will generally refrain from discussing information other than what is disclosed in our earnings release and annual report. Operator?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Jason Kim with Goldman Sachs.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one for Jerry is just hoping to get your take on the competitive environment during the fourth quarter compared to earlier in the year in 2011. And you had mentioned that your retrans negotiations may have had a little bit of an impact to your video net adds in the fourth quarter. So if you can kind of provide us with a preview of what you have been seeing in the first quarter of 2012, that would be helpful.
Well, we instituted our rate increases generally during the fourth quarter, and that includes our retransmission consent pass-through. And we had significant rate increases on our basic video offering, RTC pass-through, our premium services, on some digital equipment, and in some cases on our standalone a la carte internet service. And the video was a little larger than we would normally like to see, but it was our largest retrans cycle, and that put pressure on our costs, which we wanted to pass through. We really didn't see any significant change in the competitive environment from prior years in the fourth quarter or, frankly, during all of 2011. Probably the only significant item that occurred in the last half of the year was DirecTV with giving away free Sunday ticket with the subscription. And that may have had some impact. But I think the biggest question for us on the video side is single play video. Do we want to discount more? On bundling, it's obviously easier to discount and provide additional value as you buy more services from us. The one we're always wrestling with is single-play video. We want to discount and cut our cash flow or profitability from those customers but try to attract more, or do we continue to do what we've been doing, which is more maximize ARPU, maybe at the expense of growth in single-play video customers. But single-play are our highest churn customers, and to date we've elected to probably be a little more aggressive in our pricing as opposed to going just after units. So, but from a competitive standpoint, we didn't, besides Sunday ticket, we really didn't see any significant difference.
Great. And thus far in the first quarter, the trends remain, you know, pretty strong for you guys in terms of RGU net adds for other products as well?
Well, this is a public call, so we have to refrain from forward-looking statements. But let me just put it this way. We're in St. Louis today. It's a beautiful day. There's not a cloud in the sky. It's sunny. There's no real wind. And I would say our operations are pretty much like the weather here today.
Understood. And on CapEx, in 2011, you've spent about $253 million on CapEx if we exclude Project Imagine spending. And you mentioned that, you know, thus far, total spending on Project Imagine is about $283 million, and that's 81% of the total cost, including success-based capital. So that implies around an additional $65 to $70 million of Project Imagine spending for 2012, and that gets us to about, you know, $265 or $270 of CapEx this year if we exclude Project Imagine. Are these numbers the right the right base for us to use, you know, going forward as we think about your capital intensity as Project Imagine rolls off in 2013 and beyond?
Right. Jason, the numbers that you put out there seem accurate. And so they're a good basis from which to forecast going forward. We have said on prior calls that it would be our objective to see our capital expenditures as a percent of revenue to fall over in the coming years to the low double digits. So, and we continue to think that.
Got it. And then just one question, the balance sheet. Obviously, you guys have done a refinancing of your bank debt and clean up your maturity profile. And the bonds do become callable in November 2012, and I know it's still pretty early, so I'm not sure even if it's even on your radar screen yet, but any thoughts on potentially looking to refinance those bonds as they become callable?
Well, it's not too early in the sense that, you know, we're well aware of our of the way our bonds are trading and what the economics would be for calling those bonds. So it's certainly an economic exercise we will go through. And, you know, when you can expect us, as we always do, to make a rational economic decision, but we have no plans for any further changes to the capital structure at this time.
Great. Thank you for taking my questions, and hopefully the weather continues to be great in St. Louis.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from line of Bishop Cheen with Wells Fargo.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for all the details. Question on covenant EBITDA. In your calculations, what is your covenant EBITDA that you're using pro forma? Is it,
right.
is it so, LA latest quarter times four?
We look at the trailing 12 months, and in the trailing 12 months, we look at our EBITDA, and we for covenant compliance under the bonds, if that's the question you're asking, we add back one-time and non-recurring expenses related to primarily related to NPG. We also note that there was $3 million of non-recurring compensation expense related to our equity distribution in 2011. Excluding that equity distribution comp, our adjusted EBITDA for the calculation of the incurrence test, if that's your question, or the old bank agreement would have been $724.8 million. And that would not include an adjustment for that non-cash compensation charge of $3 million.
Okay,
let me, a lot of
numbers. Just in your 3.09 and in your 7. You know, you gave it on the phone, you gave it in the press release.
$724.8 million.
That's what I was looking for. Okay.
And it's trailing 12 months, not last quarter annualized.
Right.
Okay, so it's not last quarter annualized. It's just good old LTM.
Yeah, it's never been anything other than LTM.
Okay, that is very helpful. And then can you restate one more time, under the new credit facility, your leverage cap, I think I heard you say, and it steps down over time to 4.0. What does it start out at?
4.5
under the secured debt.
Beginning June 30th.
Okay.
The first full quarter after the close.
All right. And it steps down to 4.0 over the life or through 2017?
It steps down to 4.0 sooner than 2017. There's a step-down schedule in the credit agreement.
Okay. I will look for that. All right. And then one more time. On Project Imagine, we're 80%, 81% done. So you envision it being done pretty much in calendar 2012?
Definitely.
Correct.
In calendar 2012.
Okay. And then remind us again, once that's done, a more normalized CapEx for Sequel going forward would be in the range of what?
We do not provide forward-looking statements on capital expenditures. We have said that our capital expenditures will trend as a percent of revenue to the low double digits. And so that that is what we continue to believe.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bishop.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of David Sherritt with Barclays.
Good morning. Just operational questions and then one financial. On the operating side, in terms of programming cost increases that we should be expecting post this cycle, I just wonder if you can give us some expectations for 2012 for programming cost increases. I know you don't want to give too much forward looking, but you've gone through this significant cycle over the last few months, and maybe just as a comp, what were the pro forma programming cost increases for 2011? And then on the ARPU side, you mentioned that there was some impact from retrans pass-throughs and some of the pricing adjustments you've made that impacted some of your fourth quarter trends. Did we see the full fourth quarter impact for those ARPU, for fourth quarter ARPU impact from those pricing changes, or is there more carry-through? We'll see maybe more of a lift in the first quarter as well before we see that full run rate. That's first on the operating side, then I'll just follow up with a financial one after.
David, I'll answer the first part of your question regarding programming expenses, and we really do refrain from talking about our programming and RTC expenses, as that can never really benefit us to discuss that level of detail. I will say that on the fourth quarter over the year ago fourth quarter, our programming expense plus RTC per subscriber grew in a range very typical of what we have heard from the other MSOs, high 8%, low 9% range. And that, I believe, is very consistent with our peer group. Our budget for 2012, we have not made programming expense public, but you should expect ranges like that or maybe slightly higher because of this retrans cycle we've just been through, but that I think again would be very consistent with what we understand is happening generally in the industry.
From an ARPU perspective, I would characterize it this way: the great majority of the revenue impact would have flowed through in 2011. We do see some residual impact in January of 2012.
Well, to be fair, the rate increases are typically November, December, so the quarter would not have reflected the entire impact.
That's fair.
So January will increase because we'll have the full quarter impact.
Right.
Perfect. Yeah, that's what I was looking for. And then if I can just follow up on the question about the refinancing of the bonds being callable at the end of the year, I just wondering if you can just provide some color if, how much of the consideration as you think about it is not just the NPV and where rates are at the time and where you can refinance, and how much of the consideration is strategic and having prepayable debt. It could be a benefit for the company to have, debt that is callable for, other strategic considerations or again, having prepayable debt. I'm just wondering if you can, just give us some color as you're thinking about it. Is it just an NPV argument, or, are there other strategic considerations as well when you think about that call option at the end of the year?
Right. It is clearly never just an economic argument. If the economics are hugely compelling, we have to consider that. If the economics are not compelling, we also have to consider the prepayable nature of our capital structure versus entering into, additional call periods. So all of those elements are factors in our analysis. In terms of near-term maturities, we're comfortable with our nearest maturity being out there 5 years. That's not a huge factor, but all the other factors that I just mentioned certainly play into the ultimate decision, and not one factor in particular.
Right. So I mean, the maturity does help you, given how far out that is. It is possible that you could be looking at a high yield market environment where it is NPV positive, but still those other considerations could make you not pursue a refinancing.
That is true, because the maturities are so far out there. But certainly, the more economically compelling it is, you know, the more we would look at it.
Perfect. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Pace with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, thank you. I'd love to dig into, I guess, the rate increases in November and December a little bit more. So I thank you for the timing there. I'm just wondering, on customer bills, what exactly will they be seeing in terms of the add-on for RTC? What did you guys raise the rack rate for a basic video service? And then you mentioned a couple other things that you might have increased pricing on. Would love to get that color.
I think as opposed to getting into all the specifics, what we're comfortable saying is, on average, our customers saw a 4.6% increase in their bills. Would prefer to leave it at that.
Okay, fair enough. Question for Mary. I guess pro forma for the recently announced and pending dividends, where does the original common investment basis stand for your owners, and how much more is left before the accreted amount on the preferreds can be redeemed, and what is the amount on the ladder there?
Yes, Mike. So pro forma for the expected distribution of $370 million and the expected distribution of $70 million that we'll do in May, the remaining contributed equity in our company is about $126 million, or 14% of the original contribution. In terms of the preferred, in the January 2011 distribution, we returned all of the original amount of the preferred, which was $124.7 million or so, and what remains there is the accreted value, and that accretion was $102 million at 12/31/2011.
Thank you. And then another one for you, Mary, on swaps. You have a bunch rolling off this year. Did you put in place any new swaps for the new credit facility, or should we expect you to do that at some point, and how much of the total credit facility would you think about doing there?
The swaps that we had in place previously do roll off meaningfully next month and later this year. We did not put in place any additional swaps when we closed our new credit facility, nor are we required to put in any new swaps in our credit facility. However, I will say that we are looking at interest rate protection products generally, and we have not made any decisions about them. The yield curve looks like it's going to be pretty flat for a period of time, so we feel like we have time to evaluate if and how much interest rate protection we would put on. Remember, of course, that we have a natural hedge in our holdings one notes of $1.825 billion.
Gotcha. And then if I could ask Jerry this question, it's of the financial nature, but I'd love to know how he thinks about this. And I'll probably oversimplify this quite a bit, but you know, the company is about to take, I guess, its second or third dividend, or pay its second or third dividend. And I guess historically what you've done, you delevered down to the 5x area, and then you relever back up to, you know, high 5x area. And I guess just assuming the current ownership stays in place, you know, how should we think about this going forward? Should we continue to see that type of trend if the ownership remains in place? And then, you know, as if and when your growth rate ever does slow from 10% EBITDA growth per year, how do we think about what your upper end of the leverage spectrum would be for comfort, I guess?
Well, as we've said in the past, we, in terms of our leverage, we definitely want to make sure that we protect our ratings. We do not want, absent some major unforeseen event, and as you said, your question was if we go along with our existing investors, we want to make sure that whatever we do, it doesn't jeopardize our ratings. That's number one. Number two, as you have suggested, the last 2 years we have kind of moved down close to 5 times and then moved back up to 5.75 or so in that kind of range. I would say going forward with Project Imagine being completed later this year, and whether or not our growth will slow, and eventually, you know, it has to slow. But we will. You can probably expect over the next several years with steady state investors that our historical leverage levels will start moving lower.
Okay, thank you very much.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Your next question comes from the line of David Phipps with Citi.
Hi, thank you. Can you talk about the M&A environment and how you're thinking about that as you go forward in the next few years?
Sure. There are actually the M&A market in the cable business is starting to see a little bit more activity. We are starting to see the beginning of what we think is a somewhat of an acceleration in the M&A market. We continue to look at acquisitions, but I have to tell you, it would have to be very, very strategic for us. It is major acquisitions, frankly, given still completing Project Imagine, given the dividends that we've issued, it really is not our top priority. That being said, if there was some compelling strategic acquisition that was just such a great fit that we really had to pursue it, we, of course, again, would be cognizant of our ratings. And if it was major, we would have to look at bringing in additional equity if necessary to maintain those ratings. But bottom line is, it looks like there will be more activity. However, it is not at the top of our priority list.
And then finally, as part of the transaction, you're going to draw down about $160 million on the revolver. And how do you think about that draw on the revolver? Is that something that you'd seek to pay back as rapidly as free cash flow is available, or is it something that you begin to use the revolver a little bit more as we go through time now?
Right. Well, we see a path to reducing our revolver borrowings down in 2013, you know, to zero eventually. So there's a short-term need for the revolver, but we would be paying that down in the ordinary course as we generate free cash flow.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Adam Spielman with PPM America. Adam, your line is open. That question has been withdrawn. Your next question comes from the line of Mark Stevie with Warren Communications.
Hi, yes, I just wanted to double check. I think you mentioned it in the call there. The number of TiVo subscribers you have at this point and how many you added over the last year. And also, I was curious how many are getting, you know, how many boxes on average these people are taking at this point.
We did not mention it, but at this point, we mentioned the percentage that the product has been deployed in front of. I believe that the number was 70%. We today we're approaching. We're approaching 10,000 customers and close to 20,000 set-top boxes have been deployed.
Okay. And when would you hope to kind of reach the 100% area that you're at 70% now? I was just curious when you would have kind of full market coverage.
Yeah. So it will probably never get to 100%.
Okay.
But you know, we'll continue to. We're deploying more as we speak. We'll get to percentages that are equal to the distribution you see when we talk about our Project Imagine penetration of those types of services, VOD and DOCSIS 3.0, et cetera. So you'd be in the 90% type range.
Range.
And
okay.
And that's happening this year. And so.
Okay.
I'm just going to elaborate a little bit about TiVo. First of all, we're still in its infancy in the rollout. As we're rolling it out, we're taking a a careful stance. You have to qualify your customer base. Because of the robust nature of TiVo, we require a customer to take at least 10 meg of internet speed from us in order to make sure that they have a pleasurable experience. And further, we're a little bit careful because we don't want to market to our existing customer base too heavily. We don't want to have existing boxes be turned in for TiVo too much and then end up having too much of inventory of legacy boxes.
Okay.
To be frank about it.
Right, that makes – right. And just remind me, what is the cost to the customer for the TiVo service?
It's generally in line with the cost of our existing HD DVR service.
Okay.
In certain cases, it could be a couple bucks more, but generally it's in line. It's in the $15 range.
Okay. And your current penetration on the HD DVRs overall, is it roughly the same? I think TiVo, you said, was, what, 47.7% or something like that.
That was the DVR penetration.
Oh, that's DVR overall. Okay, got it.
Okay. Yeah.
And one last question on Project Imagine. The 81%, which of your markets still remain to be kind of turned on there? Or is there any major markets that are, on the board for this year?
No, there's not. If you compare the percentages that we penetrated at the end of this year versus the percentages that Jerry discussed at the beginning of the call, they're relatively close. So most of the work has been done. We're launching a few more VOD markets. We're adding HD channels across the footprint this year. We'll have a couple more DOCSIS 3.0 launches, but we're generally wrapping it up.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Mark Rose with RBC Capital Markets.
Hi, guys. Just a question on the capital expenditures. I appreciate the guidance. As I, listen to your peers, while they're kind of the equivalent of Project Imagines are wrapping up, they don't seem to be lowering CapEx as much as you in the out years are not talking about it, and it seems to be about commercial services. And I was just curious, as you look at, what you're doing in fiber to the tower and other services, could CapEx, could there be more reasons for more CapEx in the future for commercial services?
We put out a range of a CapEx range in 2012 of 325 to 345. One
right.
of the big reasons for that range is a view that commercial, is a strategic and capital consuming area of the business that we would want to pursue because the returns are so good for us. So you can see that we, have embedded in that guidance, a little bit of a view that, we have to see how commercial unfolds. We have in our long-term forecast definitely factored in commercial. If commercial is more robust than what we have factored in, well, then of course. We will have to spend additional dollars. We will also expect to get additional revenue. So as a percent of revenue, I'm not sure that would change our view all that much in the long run.
And if you recall, when we entered into Project Imagine, it's, we added $350 million over 3 years, so more than $100 million a year to a base of expenditure at the time that was in the $230-$240 million range. So we significantly ramped it up. So at this point, it's hard to see visibility into maintaining that level of replacing that level of expenditure.
With anything.
Okay,
right.
I see what you mean when you look at the 230 to 40 now to where mid to low double digits. That's helpful.
Yeah.
That being said, as I mentioned in my remarks, this could be a watershed year for us for fiber to the tower, and there's a limited window of opportunity.
Right.
And could we go higher than that because of wild success in fiber to the tower? I only say I hope so.
Right. We all hope so. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
Your Your next question comes from the line of Adam Spielman with PPM America.
Thank you. Sorry about getting dropped off before. Just to tie up the question on capital returns. So just so I understand, once you return another whatever the remaining 100-some-odd million of common equity, then you can contractually take out the rest of the preferred. Is that right?
That's accurate.
Okay. And then
go ahead.
Question on is your overbuild percentage change at all, and do you expect anybody to build out either UVerse or anybody else? Are there any markets that people are edging out into over the next couple of years that you know of?
Yeah, as of year end, our overbuild penetrations have not changed. They were a little over 7% in terms of wireline video overbuilds. UVerse, as naturally would be the case, we'll see some edge outs from them. One we're immediately aware of is in Stillwater, Oklahoma, where they have permission to launch that service in Stillwater.
Okay, thank you. And just so I understand, you are not disclosing, or if I missed it, please point me there, commercial revenue.
We did disclose it in my prepared remarks. We said that commercial revenue in the aggregate was $57.8 million, which is 11.8% of total revenue. We don't break it out as its own segment. That was for the quarter. Thanks, Jerry. That was for the fourth quarter. We don't break it out on the P&L as its own segment is what I think we were referring to.
Okay. And then when I look at your non-video subs, I mean, I'm just wondering, is there a reason if I take your customers less your basic subs, it doesn't get me to your level of non-video subs? I think that's usually the way it works, and I think those are all residential numbers. So I'm just wondering if there's something I'm missing in those submetrics.
EBUs? Our basic subs include an equivalizing factor for bulk video.
Okay.
And the customer relationships are purely residential, so they're two slightly different takes.
We would actually, if we just did a pure doors basis, we would have a significantly higher number of doors or homes that we actually serve, but we use the EBU. So we divide revenues from bulk by the rate in that market to come up with an equivalent bulk unit.
Got it. And then just final one for me. I mean, not trying to be specific about returns to shareholders, but, you know, or M&A. I mean, there is, as you point out, you know, growing free cash flow for a number of reasons. So, you know, how should we think about what you would use that free cash flow for, or how are you thinking about that?
Look, I right now I'm focused on making sure we execute and get that free cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
We're only going to use that growth and free cash flow for good rate of return uses. And let's finish Project Imagine later this year, have our swaps go off, and make sure that we execute and get that free cash flow, and then we can decide what we want to do with it.
Great. Thanks a lot.
There are no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your continued interest. We appreciate it, and have a good weekend.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.